This is In Ear Insights, the Trust Insights podcast. AI Academy for Marketers is an online education platform designed to help marketers like you understand, pilot, and scale artificial intelligence. The AI Academy features deep dive certification courses of 3 to 5 hours, along with dozens of short courses, 30 to 60 minutes each, taught by leading AI and marketing experts. Join Katie Robert, CEO of Trust Insights, and me, Christopher Penn, Chief Data Scientist of Trust Insights, for 3 of our courses in the Academy. 5 use cases of AI for content marketing, intelligent attribution modeling for marketing, and detecting and mitigating bias in marketing AI. The Academy is designed for manager-level and above marketers and largely caters to non-technical audiences, meaning you don't need a programming background or a background in data science to understand and apply what you learn. One registration gives you unlimited access to all the courses, an invitation to a members-only Slack instance, and access to new courses every quarter. Join now and save $100 off registration when you go to trustinsights.ai/AI Academy and use registration code PEN100 today. That's trustinsights.ai/AI Academy and use registration code PEN100 today. In this week's In Ear Insights, we are talking about AI and machine learning and rushing ahead without some due diligence and caution. So, Katie, one of the things that has been discussed about AI is that there's obviously a lot of problems with things like bias and unintended consequences and not being able to know what your models are actually doing. I sat through a briefing last week with IBM on interpretability and explainability, and we even had to level set at the beginning of that to say what those terms meant. And it got me thinking, why isn't there a process like clinical trials for AI? It seems like that would be, if you're going to be having something that's a life or death thing, which in a lot of cases, AI is making life or death decisions with self-driving cars and medical decisions and things, it should have the same level of rigor. So for those who are unfamiliar, would you walk through what the steps of a clinical trial are?
So the clinical trial very much follows the scientific method, which is something that we talk about a lot. And so you have to have a hypothesis that you're testing. Now, before I start to dig in and people start writing in to correct me, I want to be clear. I worked on small business innovative research clinical trials. And so while, yes, there were pools of people, we weren't testing drugs on them. We were testing software that would help with their journey in their substance abuse and pain management. So I just want to sort of, you know, level set there that I was not involved in clinical trials where we were actually testing life or death drugs. We were testing, you know, interventions is really the term for it. So a clinical trial is basically you are testing out this idea or this thing. And so, you know, in the software side of it, which would probably mirror more what you're talking about with AI, you have to come up with a hypothesis. You have to sort of, you know, do your due diligence of research of people who have done something similar to this before, understanding the results that they got to learn from it. I think that first step, that initial research, is the thing that's probably most often skipped over, because if you're building a new widget or whatever using AI, you're not necessarily going back saying, has anyone else done this before? So a lot of times people are reinventing the wheel. And so once you have your hypothesis, you then have to come up with this whole plan of how you're going to get from hypothesis to result. And in a clinical trial, it often involves recruiting people to test out this thing that you're building. And so you have to, you know, randomize, you have to have your control and your experimental groups, you have to have, you know, blinded studies, you have to have your A/B testing, you have to make sure you're tracking everything very carefully along the way. You need to make sure that people understand if there are any risks involved. And then you have to collect a certain amount of data in order for it to be a significant sampling of that particular type of population, whatever that population is. And then you continue the process until you get some sort of an outcome to say, okay, this is working or this isn't. And then you continue to repeat that until you get a workable thing that can essentially go out into the market. And so the clinical trials that I worked on would last upwards of 3 and 4 years. And that's just testing software. That's not testing drugs and waiting, you know, years to see if there's side effects that come into play with that, with a person's individual unique DNA. So does that paint the picture? Does that answer your question, Chris?
Yeah. And again, you have worked in pharma and medical. I have not. The closest I've gotten was pre-med in college. but my understanding from having, you know, read up a bunch for the pandemic was that there's basically four steps to a trial, right? There's phase one, which is, does this thing cause harm? Like, and if it does, we should probably not use it. Two, does it work at all? Three, does it work better than the existing standard of care? And then four, does it have any long-term effects? And, you know, four occurs after a drug has been released to the market. That's my general understanding of the framework. I know there's variations across the board. And I think when it comes to AI, I think that feels like a good framework to use, because what happens a lot of the time, like we were talking 2 weeks ago about OpenAI's new GPT-3 model. People are all rushing and say, we've got to use this thing. Let's get it into the field. You know, let's be generating SEO content. Let's be generating, you know, social media content. Let's be writing new books with it. And so we're kind of rushing to deployment, and we have done zero of the phases. When we look at something like you know, a self-driving car, for example, that phase one, does it cause harm? it seems like a step we should not skip.
You're right. We shouldn't be skipping that. But yet, so there's another factor in, if you're doing a clinical trial, you've likely been given some sort of a grant. And so there's accountability for how you're spending that money. Whereas when you're developing AI, it's likely just money generated from the company itself. And so you can spend it however you want. So in a clinical trial, at least I know it, one of the banes of my existence was submitting all the financials back to the government to say, this is how we spent the money, and this is how we responsibly are doing this clinical trial. And if for a second they thought that you weren't being responsible with your testing, where humans were involved, they would pull the plug, they would pull the money. The same is not true if you're developing AI in a private institution. Like, if you and I suddenly decide to start developing something, then who's going to tell us we can't do it? Or who's going to tell us we're doing it wrong?
Huh. That's a bit problematic, because, you know, we've talked in the past about the example of this company that created this predictive algorithm for geo-targeting your ideal customers, and they essentially just reinvented redlining, which is illegal. How do we fix this? Can this be fixed? Or are we just going to have a world full of rogue AIs out there that are just doing stupid stuff until the, you know, parent company gets sued for something, for doing something incorrect? I mean, how do we bring this idea of not, you know, bureaucratic red tape and slowing everything down just to slow things down, but to actually get people just to stop and think, hey, does this thing cause harm? Does it discriminate against, you know, a gender? Does it discriminate against a sexual orientation? I don't think anybody's doing that right now.
They're not. And so what you're talking about is, it's not bureaucracy, it's responsible accountability. And so, you know, I don't know how exactly this factors in, because it's, you know, my Monday morning, you know, stream of consciousness. But, you know, if you think about like the top tech companies in the world right now, they're sort of under scrutiny because everyone's worried about that monopoly. And so if you have only four companies, Amazon, Google, Facebook, and what, Microsoft?
Microsoft and IBM, yeah.
And IBM. You know, if they're the only ones calling the shots, then you have five really large companies where the internal issues and processes, who's holding them accountable? And so I feel like that's part of why, you know, they want to start to break apart that monopoly, where there's a little bit more diversity, there's a little bit more transparency and oversight. But if the company that has the means to create AI over and over and over again is just sort of doing it in this black box, and we can't tell what's going to happen, nothing's going to change. And so there needs to be, you know, I hate to say it because I hate committees, but there needs to be some kind of a committee, you know, that really says, is this a good idea? Do we need this thing? or just some sort of accountability of like checking in, like, hey, we're building a self-driving car. Okay, then the committee goes, all right, how are you testing that? Oh, we're not. Okay, that's a problem. So let's take a step back for a second. Companies don't want to do that because it's going to cost them more money and take more time to do. And consumers want things right now. They want it instantaneously. They want a self-driving car already, whereas it's not ready. Because if you still have people physically driving a car, the self-driving car has to constantly correct for me getting distracted and suddenly braking. Whereas if every single car was a self-driving car, then they could all operate on the same grid and system. So it's like, I feel like I'm rambling a bit, but I don't know how to solve that problem while we have these tech monopolies of the same five companies only being the ones to have the resources to develop any sort of sophisticated AI.
Right. And with the example with autonomous vehicles, you have the National Transportation Safety Board, right? That exists right. as an agency to inspect for things. There is no version of that for, say, a social media algorithm. And yet you could make the very plausible case that if you were spreading, say, massive disinformation about a medical condition, say, the effectiveness of a drug for a pandemic, that algorithm could legitimately end up killing just as many people as a car that just kind of, you know, goes and does its own thing. So from a practical perspective, then, how do companies who want to behave ethically, and I realize that's a big if, but how do companies adopt this? Do they do the clinical trial process and build that process internally? Say, okay, first we're going to test this for known harms. Does it harm our business? Does it harm the customer? Does it produce unnecessary risk from a regulatory perspective? Like, for example, does it discriminate? If so, is there a bias that is illegal? How do we think about building those processes so that we can avoid? Yeah, it's kind of like the Motion Picture Association. They end up creating movie ratings of their own because they did not want the government to be regulating their content. So, you know, rated R, rated NC-17, whatever. They voluntarily came up with this. How do companies do the same thing so that the government doesn't get up in our business and then you have a bunch of, you know, octogenarian geriatric people trying to legislate against, you know, deep neural networks?
You know, it starts with transparency. And so the reason why people feel like they need to intervene and step in is because they don't know what's happening. It's like, well, I don't know what you're doing, so let me just, you know, get in there and see for myself. But if you offer up and say, this is what we're doing, we're actually developing this kind of a thing, they're like, oh, that's all you're doing? All right, I don't care. Let me go move on to something else. And so it's getting ahead of the speculation. It's getting ahead of people saying, I need to know more and I need to have an opinion about that thing. And so, you know, you brought up the example of Facebook, which is, you know, we could certainly talk about that for hours. You know, Facebook is self-governing. They're the only ones who are making the decision whether or not their algorithm is serving up the right content or the wrong content. And if you boil that down to a very simple example, in best practices, developers should never QA their own code because they're too close to it. You need someone outside who's more objective to say, well, I don't understand what this does, or did you mean for it to do this way, and start to poke holes in it, like a proper QA engineer and a tester, someone who didn't develop the thing, knows what the thing is supposed to do, and then can objectively say it's not doing the thing it's supposed to do. Whereas the person who developed it is very blinded to it and says, yeah, it's working exactly as I want it to. You know, it's very much the same thing with developing AI. You should have people who were not involved in building it, doing the testing of it to make sure. And then that group in and of itself should be comprised of, you know, different age groups, different backgrounds, different genders, you know, all of those things in order to make sure that you don't accidentally create something that's incredibly discriminatory and racist.
I think there could be a cottage industry in AI auditing, honestly, when you know, listening to this, just saying, hey, did you test for these things? Did you do these things? Did you, you know, here's the checklist of best practices. Your example with Facebook, I think, is really important in terms of transparency, because there's an interesting dichotomy with Facebook and LinkedIn, the two networks that have talked a lot about algorithms. Facebook doesn't talk about its algorithm. We can see the results of it, but they do share a tremendous amount of data. You can dig into the data. You can use services like the company they bought, CrowdTangle, to export massive amounts of data. On the flip side, LinkedIn has its engineers out on podcasts and YouTube shows, stuff, talking all the time about their algorithm, but they don't share their data. They, you know, their data is locked down tighter than Fort Knox. And so maybe that's an avenue we can explore too, is like, is there a minimum amount of data that these companies should make public, just simply as a public good, to say like, yes, we're, you know, here's, you can audit, it's been anonymized, it's been de-identified, but someone else can audit independently, and at the same time have somebody saying, yes, here's how we're doing, you know, here's how the news feed broadly works. No, but you have to give away the secret sauce. But when we look at the two algorithms, Facebook optimizes solely for engagement. Like, they want eyeballs on stuff all the time. And we see the result of this in the fact that it tends to promote more extreme content all the time. LinkedIn, their algorithm has 7 different optimization points, one of which is complaints, and the other which is engagement, because their objective is not eyeballs alone. It's one of them. But because 40% of their revenue comes from enterprise sales software, they need people to stay on the network and feel like it's a safe place. And so maybe that's at the level where a national AI safety board could come in and say like, yeah, Facebook, you need to add some more safety features, and LinkedIn, you need to show us the data to back up what you're saying is true.
So it's interesting. We had started this conversation of why isn't AI more like a clinical trial? So the big thing with a clinical trial is it's all documented and published, and anybody about any kind of drug out there on the market that's been run through a proper clinical trial can go and research exactly how it was tested from start to finish. You cannot do that with AI. And the example you're giving about LinkedIn and Facebook is exactly that. It all comes down to transparency. And so, no, you don't have to go into the nitty-gritty of exactly how the algorithm works, but the less you're giving away, the more people assume you have something to hide, the more suspicious they become of it, and the more they're like, something's not right here. Why can't you just tell me what it is that you're doing? And that is a big part of it. And so, you know, Chris, one of our core values is we're transparent. We have nothing to hide. We're not going to give you, you know, breakdown step by step of how we've built certain kinds of code. But if you want to know how we did it, we're going to tell you. You'll probably be bored to tears and fall asleep. But the point is, we have nothing to hide. And I think that that is the big difference between developing AI and a clinical trial. People are so protective about their technology right now because it's such a competitive market. Everybody wants to be first. Everybody wants to get rich. Everybody wants to be that big household name, that they are sacrificing actual like usability. And is this even a good thing to be doing? Because it's all about the mighty dollar right now.
It's interesting you mentioned that, because I think there's another angle to this, which is the phase 3 of a clinical trial, which is what you come up with better than the existing standard of care? And in the world of AI, I think there's a very real problem where if you implemented that, you would realize that a lot of what's being promoted out there is not better than the existing standard of care. So, real simple example, when we do predictive analytics and we talk about time series forecasting, you know, there are some companies that are cranking out these incredible, you know, super deep feed forward and recurrent neural networks and stuff like that. And in academic testing, it's been shown that many of these neural networks don't produce much more than, you know, a 1% increase in accuracy over the old fashioned ARIMA model. And so in a clinical trial setting, your brand new, fancy, you know, super expensive, super cool sounding neural network is not better than the standard of care. It is computationally 10 times more expensive and doesn't deliver better results. So you would actually fail a clinical trial at that point, because you wouldn't be able to show that you improved on the standard of care. If that was applied to AI, and we look at, you know, Scott Brinker's MarTech 8000 landscape, I think, you know, of all the companies that say they're doing AI, we'd be able to knock off probably 70 or 80% and say, nope, not any better than existing, not any better than existing. Which, I don't know, how do you feel about that? Do those companies, are they just trying to take advantage of people who are like, oh, it contains AI, it must be good, versus, oh, this will get me the business results I want?
You know, not knowing the inner workings of all of those companies, I would say it's probably about 50-50. I would say if you lost a good chunk of those companies, you could still get the same results. Chris, it was you last week who pointed out that the, you know, first rule of Google's machine learning handbook is, if you don't need to use machine learning, don't use it. It doesn't necessarily make your thing better. And so if, you know, when we've talked about this with, you know, RPA, and so if automating something doesn't actually save you anything, if it actually makes things more difficult, then don't do it. Then just pull the numbers manually. It'll be fine. You know, you'll get the exact same result. If your AI is constantly breaking and you're constantly fixing it, then maybe it's not the best solution. And so I think that, you know, when we're thinking about these companies who are slapping the AI sticker, you know, on their website, it is a shiny object. And people have this misunderstanding that AI saves time, saves money, you know, makes things faster, shinier, better, smarter. That's not necessarily true. Sometimes it causes more harm because, you know, we know that AI is only as good as the data that it's fed. And if it's fed bad data, if it's fed biased data, if it's fed racist data, then it's going to produce that thing. And so, you know, there should be some sort of, you know, committee or board or something. And I don't just mean, you know, five people in the world to look over all of AI. Like, it has to be within your own organization. It has to be within your own industry and sort of expand beyond there of people who are saying, hey, is this even a good idea?
Yep. So the takeaways, if you are thinking about implementing AI or you're evaluating vendors that say they use AI, give some thought to implementing that clinical trial framework. Step one, does it cause harm? Outline the risks, outline what could go wrong. You know, that's number one in basic planning. What other things could possibly go wrong? Phase two, does the vendor's tool or does the AI work at all? Is it just smoke and mirrors or is there a there? And then step three, is it better than what you're doing currently? And with that framework, you're probably going to make fewer mistakes. You're probably not going to rush into very expensive mistakes. And if you're dealing with vendors that can't credibly answer detailed questions about all three, that's probably a good sign not to work with that vendor. If you got follow-up questions about this or anything else regarding analytics and data science and AI, drop by our free Slack group. Go to trustinsights.ai/analyticsformarketers. Over 1,200 professionals in there chatting about this stuff all day, every day. It's totally free to join, and we look forward to seeing you there. If you have questions about this episode, stop by the blog and the associated entry for this episode over at trustinsights.ai. We'll talk to you soon. Take care.
Want help solving your company's data analytics and digital marketing problems? Visit trustinsights.ai today and let us know how we can help you.